Thank you, Sue. The marshal can open court.
Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Flory, Judge Connolly, and Judge Reyes. The Honorable James B. Flory presiding.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Even though we're appearing virtually via Zoom today, our rules are the same, meaning you'll each have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you wish to use that. We are recording the proceedings and they will be posted according to our normal business practices, but any other recordings are prohibited by our rules. So with that, please begin your arguments by telling us who you are, and otherwise we're ready to proceed. Counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor, Attorney Christopher Kalla, K-A-L-L-A, on behalf of the appellant. Thank you. My name is Christopher Kalla. I represent Central Towers Limited Partnership, the appellant. This is an appeal of an eviction court trial. The appellant is the landlord, the plaintiff in the underlying matter. The respondent, Mr. Norman Schiffman, is the tenant. He was the defendant in the underlying matter. This case is from Ramsey County. This eviction was started because of a bed bug problem in Mr. Schiffman's apartment. The problem became so bad that the city of St. Paul issued two correction notices directed towards the landlord. Exhibit 2 from July 23rd, 2020, and Exhibit 3, August 10th, 2020. Now, even though we are now past the eviction moratorium, this case did start during the eviction moratorium, and the relevant statutory, or I should say, the relevant law at the time was Executive Order 20-73, which then was superseded by Executive Order 20-79. Those executive orders, for all intents and purposes, are the same. Despite the landlord's best efforts to get Mr. Schiffman to cooperate with the preparation of his apartment, the bedbug treatments were unsuccessful. This is likely because Mr. Schiffman failed to properly prepare his apartment for treatment. Under the backdrop of Executive Order 20-73, the landlord is required to show that the tenant's behavior did one of two things: seriously endangered others or caused significant damage to the property. The thrust of the landlord's claim—
On that point, Mr. Kalla, on the day of trial, what was the evidence in the record that either of those things had occurred?
Certainly. So as I was going to say, the thrust of the landlord's claims that Mr. actions and inactions seriously endangered the residents of the building by putting the entire building at risk for the landlord to lose its certificate of occupancy.
So to that point, Mr. Kalla, I'm sorry, Judge Connolly, were you going to ask?
No, I was not. Thank you, Judge Reyes.
Okay. So to that point, Mr. Kalla, is there any evidence in the record that this infestation affected any of the other people in the apartment complex?
No.
Okay. Did and the apartment complex did not lose its license or have any other action taken by the city of St. Paul?
Fortunately, that's correct.
Okay.
Then why are we here? To be blunt about it.
Well, to be blunt about it.
I get it.
Yeah. No.
And I certainly, and believe me, when it's Ms. Orr's time, I'm, you know, going to put her through the paces as well. But I mean, I get it. And I certainly am not going to say, you know, bed bugs are just a, quote, nuisance, unquote. But I think Judge Reyes hits the nail on the head. I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of things could have happened. I mean, you know, the entire building could have been, walls could have been infested as it was in Delamater versus Foreman. But it sounds like despite, I don't know, the worst efforts, the best efforts of Ms. Orr's client, none of that happened. So I am having difficulty finding that as of the trial, the two points that have to occur in order for there to be an exception to the moratorium were met. And on that point, I would be hard pressed to reverse. So, Mr. Kell, I've spoken a lot. Why don't you now tell me why I am wrong?
No, I appreciate Your Honor expressing the clear threshold for your decision-making here. I think the answer follows on the case of MCDA versus Smallwood. And Ms. Orr's position, Mr. Schiffman's position, is that, look, this isn't, you know, you can cure a breach, and this really isn't a breach case. This is an executive order case. And I just think that's the wrong way of looking at it. We have a breach of lease. That was clear. I mean, the judge found that in her order. She found that there was a breach of lease. She just didn't find that it rose to the level of serious endangerment. And so my position under Smallwood is that you don't get to cure a breach. And the fact that this case got delayed several times, and the reason it got delayed several times is the parties were trying to settle the case. I mean, had we known that settlement would eventually allow the problem to get fixed and therefore
on
cure
that
the problem.
Point, you just said you're not allowed to cure a breach. I mean, didn't we say in Maine Heights that you absolutely can, or at least the landlord can? So I don't see if a landlord can't cure the breach, and you know, apart from whether you know the lease is controlling and or the executive order trumps the lease, I mean, you apparently under Maine Heights, you can, if you're using reasonable efforts. Now, I suppose there's an argument that you know, Ms. Orr's client wasn't. I don't know, maybe was, maybe wasn't, but why can't you cure breach?
I confess, I'm not familiar with the Maine Heights case you're referring to.
Well, that is an unpublished opinion, but, you know, it's written by Judge Bryan, and the last time I checked, he's a pretty smart guy. You know, we ruled that the district court denied the habitability defense, concluding the covenant of habitability does not impose liability when the landlord cures or attempts to cure a defect within a reasonable period of time. So, I mean, breach was cured at the time of trial, i.e. there were no bugs, you know, I'm not so sure it's, you know, you win simply because, you know, he wasn't, I don't know, what's the word, responding appropriately in good faith prior to the treatments.
Sure. So Maine Heights being unpublished and MCA versus Smallwood being a published case, that would be the first line of response. The second line of response is, what do we do with cases where tenants have vicious dogs and then they take them away? Tenants make verbal assaults and then they apologize. Tenants wave guns around the property and then they get rid of the guns. And those are all the types of cases where there's serious breaches. And just because they stop, we say, it's okay. I mean, Mr. Schiffman's attitude at Exhibit 34, he's characterizing this as a persecution complex against him to get rid of his personal stuff, the stuff in his apartment that makes life worth living. You look at the photo.
Mr. Kahl, I understand that. And you know, we understand that he may not have been the most cooperative tenant there, but I think that's a side issue. I think that the key issue is that you did have, there was a big bed bug infestation of his dwelling. He certainly was in breach. I think the record is pretty clear that he was, and I don't think he actually even contests that. I think the issue does boil down to is whether or not this does rise to a serious endangerment of others, and the infestation had been fixed. It was fixed on November 2nd of 2020. So I'm really struggling with what more needs to be done here. It seems like it's been, the problem was fixed and it didn't spread to any other rooms, didn't, that was the only room that was affected, and then that had been taken care of. So,
okay, the answer then, Your Honor, is that the multiple continuances of this case were in an effort to settle the case. That's That's why the case got continued. Had the landlord said, look, we're not going to settle this case, we're just going to prosecute it. The bed bugs are still an active problem. We're going to win this eviction on the first available trial date, which would be 6 days after the scheduled first appearance that's announced in the summons. And the problem with, my apologies, the court's attitude towards the case being fixed during the interim is that it's going to send the wrong message to landlords to settle eviction cases. This shouldn't be gotcha litigation. We have a problem here and we're trying to settle it and it wasn't getting resolved. Maybe we should have just gone to trial and said, hey, we've got a bed bug problem here. It's active as of the day of the trial. There's been no cure. I mean, Smallwood says you can't cure the problem, but if the court's going to announce that during the settlement negotiations that gets strung out, if the problem gets cured, there's no more breach, I think the courts make a new law on that, Your Honor. And I think it sends the wrong message that landlords should try to settle cases, because that's what's going to happen. If you you look at the record and the level of treatments that keep going on, there was a problem even after the first appearance. That should be the date the court looks at. As of the first appearance, the problem existed when the summons and the complaint were filed. That's the date that Smallwood should look at.
So let me ask you this, Mr. Kala. I'm just kind of wondering just what relief, I know you're asking that we reverse this decision. I guess I'm wondering what the effect of that would be practically, and if that's what your client wants. I mean, and what I'm getting at is we're a year from the hearing now. The executive orders are no longer in effect. So I would assume we're not dealing with the heightened standard for eviction anymore. If it's an ongoing problem and if Mr. Schiffman is still there, obviously the landlord could pursue that. Doesn't appear that's happened, but maybe that's irrelevant. It's not in the record, but I'm just wondering, here we are a year post-hearing, and at the time of the trial, the evidence was that the bed bugs had been taken care of. Is what your client asking for here is that we enforce this eviction a year after the problem was eliminated? That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
Well, the answer is that's precisely what the landlord is requesting, Your Honor. And as far as not making sense, I mean, that's just the nature of the litigation and appellate process. It takes a long time to get to the answer about what should have happened a year and a half ago. And that's unfortunately what we're faced with. I mean, if the answer to your question is, well, let just bygones be bygones, what's the problem now? I mean, this isn't in the record, but the problem is that apartment is still a disaster area.
Well, the judge found it was in breach. So, I mean, what's stopping your clients from producing or from filing another unlawful detainer saying you're breaching your lease for whatever provision is claimed?
Well, quite frankly, based off of the wording of Executive Order 2073 and 2079, that evictions were merely suspended for actions less than seriously endangering or less than substantial damage, and that a breach existed, I believe we actually probably could go back to the trial court and say, hey, look, the suspension is over. We would ask that you act upon your findings from the original trial court order that he was in breach, and we could get the writ. Now, that would be unprecedented, surely, because the executive orders have just been invalidated by the eviction moratorium phase out. So for me to go back to the trial court judge and ask for that kind of relief, I guarantee you, Ms. Orr is going to say no, and we're going to be back up here in front of the three of you again, or some of your colleagues, for the same issue. Now, if the answer to your question, Judge Flory, is we can do that, then an order from this court indicating so, I think, would be sufficient. I mean, we have a sufficient record to establish those facts. The judge found a breach. Evictions for breach were suspended. That suspension is over. We can proceed. And Smallwood says, I mean, had it not been for, you know, this eviction moratorium, EO 2073 and EO 2079, we wouldn't be here on the landlord's appeal, because the breach would have been established and that would have been sufficient to give the eviction writ in favor of the landlord. The only thing that's changed is this moratorium and the phase out and the suspension.
So Mr. Collins, to that point, we do have, I think we do need to look at the moratorium and the exceptions and whether or not the exceptions were met, but don't we defer to the district court's factual findings here?
Which specific findings would those be, Your Honor?
In terms of it not being a nuisance, it only being a nuisance in this particular case under these particular facts and not rising to the level of seriously endangering others.
Sure. So we've really got two issues here. On the factual issue about being a nuisance, I would point to Dr. Krell's written exhibits that were in the record that completely undermine this nuisance idea. Second, I looked at the four cases I cite about bed bugs being a problem that the court has taken action on before. As far as not being a real problem, the city ordinances says this building can be condemned as a matter of law. That's not a factual issue, that's a legal issue.
Thank you. I'll probably have questions on follow-up on rebuttal.
Thank you. Should I close my video or keep on?
You can stay on your video, Mr. Kala, and you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Orr, you may proceed. You're on mute right now.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Laura Orr. I'm an attorney with Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services. I'm here today representing the respondent, Norman Schiffman. Respondent Norman Schiffman was 81 years old at the time of the trial in this matter. He had resided at Central Towers property for over 14 years. Until June of 2020, he had not experienced a bed bug infestation before. Central Towers, the appellate, at the time of this trial, had been registered with the Minnesota Department of Human Services as a housing with services provider.
Ms. Orr, yes. Would you like us to issue a published opinion that said bed bugs are just, quote, a nuisance, unquote? Come on, you know you
yeah.
wouldn't want that.
Well, reflecting on the language of the City of St. Paul's ordinance related to the circumstances that lead to the risk Central Towers identifies
and
as its
concern.
That,
would you like to explain the difference to me, because I am rather thick, between a material endangerment and a serious endangerment? I have to admit, I don't get it.
I will take a moment to refer to where the each term is used respectively. So when talking about serious endangerment, the language about serious endangerment is within the Executive Order 20-79. The language related to material endangerment is within the City of St. Paul's ordinance. Within the City of St. Paul's Legislative Code Section 34.23, Section 7 ends with stating that the following violations may constitute material endangerment if in combination or alone the conditions are substantial and expose the occupants or the public to danger or peril. This following list includes examples that may constitute material endangerment, and that includes insect, rodent, or other pest infestations. Although Pellet has referred to the notice of correction order as in its position as a sign of serious danger as a matter of law, a matter that should be reviewed, in which the standard of review is de novo, that argument does not take into consideration that while a nuisance may or an infestation may constitute material endangerment, it is not must. Not all nuisances cause material endangerment, not all circumstances of
so
the presence of an infestation.
If there's a rat in your client's apartment, just one, you don't believe that would constitute either a serious endangerment or a material endangerment to property or other tenants?
Yes, that is correct. It may present a habitability issue.
What if there are two rats?
That is where we do begin to so get into the realm where
100 rats in your client's apartment.
Yes. Okay?
Do you still think you have to prove that they constitute or a serious endangerment to property or the health of others or the safety of others?
That is where we get into the standard of review in which this court, if it were to...
I'm aware of the standard of review, believe me. Judge Reyes and Judge Flory explain it to me on a daily basis. My question is, if there are 100 rats in your client's apartment, do you think in order to get around the moratorium, you also have to prove that they're, nibbling or have bitten someone? Or do you think the fact that there are merely 100 rats in your apartment is enough to constitute a serious endangerment to the lives and property of your client or the other tenants in the building?
If I were the finder of fact, yes, I would find that to be an area where my use of discretion may be clearly erroneous.
Because 100 rats are just a nuisance?
In terms of the determination of whether a nuisance rises to the standard required within the city of St. Paul via the term material endangerment or within the executive order related to serious endangerment, there is that room related to the finder of fact's discretion. In that regard, in response to your earlier question, would one rat constitute material endangerment? I would say that the city of St. Paul might have trouble moving forward with a proceeding to find premises uninhabitable if it would proceed with a matter of one rat. So again, that is a territory related to finding events.
You're being recorded. The statements you just made are being recorded. You got that, right?
we are discussing, of course,
the unique facts and circumstances of this case. How is that saving you?
Yes, thank you. In those circumstances, it is speculation, and every case must be decided in the time.
What about Mr. Kayla's point, which I thought was actually quite telling? What if your client had caused a fire and the fire was put out prior to the trial, and he promised, I'm never going to make any more fires again. Under those facts, does the exceptions to the moratorium apply or do they not apply?
I would say that example does not apply to the circumstance and the fact that a fire did not occur.
That's why it's a hypothetical. Yes. I'm talking about if a fire did occur and then it was put out, 2 months before trial, and your client said, never going to do that again. Do you think that's that argument, that defense that Mr. Kayla is representing would be enough to sustain a finding that the exceptions to the moratorium don't apply?
No.
Why not?
Minnesota statutes include landlord's covenants of habitability, section 504B.161. The landlord bears the burden related to maintenance, upkeep, and repair of the property unless there are circumstances in which the tenant caused the need for repair through willful, malicious, or irresponsible conduct.
Who caused the bed bugs in this instance? Your client or the landlord?
The findings of fact from the district court make clear that the court did not find credible plaintiff's claim that defendant intentionally sought to spread bed bugs. The district court further found there is no evidence that defendant intentionally or willfully caused the infestation.
How does that finding, explain to me how that finding is supported by the evidence that he had all these papers and books and stuff in the place and wasn't going to do anything about them? I fail to see how that finding is supported by the evidence.
In that regard, we can turn to exhibits that Counsel for the appellate has cited related to Dr. Kell's publications related to facts about bed bugs. Looking at exhibit 43 from the trial record, this particular exhibit pertains to guidance for dealing with bed bugs in schools. And one statement within this exhibit relates to the fact that bugs have the utmost
admiration for academics. However, I think I'm more inclined to go with our Supreme Court's ruling on bed bugs in Delamater v. Foreman, which found that a bed bug infestation is a constructive eviction. So why doesn't the Supreme Court get to trump the good doctor?
Stepping back, I want to acknowledge that my reference to the earlier exhibit is to the point that bed bugs are not caused by uncleanliness. We again go back to the notion of causation. Appellates did not establish that respondent had caused the infestation by willful, malicious, or irresponsible conduct. While the findings of fact include a finding of lack of cleanliness, that is not a finding that relates to the circumstances of the bed bugs. And on appeal, appellate cannot change its theory of case from its complaint, which was related to its allegation of danger to tenants or its property through the presence of bed bugs. Judge Conley, I want to take for a moment to acknowledge that in responding to your most recent question, I pivoted back to finish my thought related to the finding of uncleanliness. It does not in itself a finding related to causation of the bed bug infestation. Have I, through my answer to that question, a very artful dodge. That's why I wanted to return. Has my answer to that question addressed your underlying concern? If not, would you please repeat your question?
The problem I'm having is, you know, at the end of the day, is I, you know, here in appellate land, we can always find a case. But here in appellate land, we also always like to apply basic common sense. And simply because you have an academic say that bed bugs are a nuisance does not make it so, speaking only for myself and not my treasured colleagues. So if we have a Supreme Court case that would suggest that bed bugs are grounds for constructive eviction, why wouldn't that trump, you know, that clear case law, whatever your experts said as to what he or she believes bed bugs are or are not?
And on that matter, I want to reflect that the issues of law and issues of fact under review under that particular proceeding relates to tenant remedies and a tenant's right to habitable premises. Again, this proceeding related to eviction must first, in order to prevail, appellate must first show that the burden related to the habitability issue has switched to being that of the tenant as a result of irresponsible, malicious, or willful conduct. That burden is not met. So to the extent that there is findings in the Supreme Court finding that yes, bed bugs can present a habitability concern where there is merit to proceedings for tenant remedy actions. Related to an eviction proceeding, the appellate did not meet its burden necessary to allege that the tenant bear the responsibility for this habitability concern on the premises.
Ms. Orr, I just have one quick question. Would you agree that serious endangerment under the executive order is essentially the equivalent of material endangerment under the St. Paul City Ordinance?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
To that end, when reflecting on appellate's argument that the presence of the correction order itself constituted as a matter of law an instance of serious endangerment, I want to draw attention to the contents of that letter. That letter indicates that revocation of the certificate of occupancy or a finding of a misdemeanor may be a present, may be a consequence of a lack of extermination. In this circumstance, that danger was not present. The presence of the possibility of the city using discretion in that may language was not present in this instance. And even if the city had at some point decided to move forward to issue that type of order, there is due process in that area that the city itself is bound by its legislative code. And in that regard, the language of may within its level does not rise to a level of serving as a serious danger as a matter of law. Related to the facts at hand, again, this, the standard of review related to the arguments of whether the appellate failed to meet its, The trial court was not clearly erroneous in finding that from the contents of the testimony and documentary evidence that the appellate had failed to meet its burden in showing that appellate through willful, malicious, or irresponsible conduct had caused a danger to the premises or the property. As a result, this court should affirm the decision of the lower court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Zor. Mr. Kala, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you wish. And you're on mute, sir.
If Judge Connolly doesn't have any follow-up, I'm going to start with the Maine Heights case and 504B161. I think one thing needs to be made clear here. 504B161 isn't the standard by which landlords necessarily go after tenants. It's the standard by which landlords defend against a tenant's claim for habitability problems. And it gives the landlord an out on a tenant's claim if the landlord can show the tenant was willful, malicious, or irresponsible. In the Maine Heights case, 504B161 talks about the landlord's obligation to keep something in reasonable repair. And I think to Judge Connolly's earlier question, I think the Maine Heights case basically said reasonable repair affords the landlord a reasonable time to cure. That's not the same analysis that should be drawn to compare the tenant's inability to cure a breach of lease under the Smallwood case. You know, one of the questions
Mr. Kala, I mean, you know, this is not, it's not just, I think as Ms. Orr has pointed out in her brief, you know, this is not like, was there a breach of the lease or not? We can all, you know, have a debate about that someday, but it's whether the specific exceptions that apply under the moratorium were met here. And so that's why I'm not so sure, quite frankly, Smallwood or Maine Heights, you know, the one I just threw at you, are applicable. So I guess the one question I have is there any evidence in the record that this bed bug infestation spread to another apartment?
No.
Okay. Is there any evidence in the record that the bed bugs in Ms. Orr's client's apartment caused him, you know, to come out with rashes and, you know, all the stuff you get when you get bit? Is there any evidence of that in the record?
I don't recall that being
okay
there.
So even if we all believe that, well, even if everyone acquiesces in my belief that bed bugs are not just, quote, a nuisance, unquote, have you really, I mean, did the district court in the ultimate question, which is whether the exceptions of the moratorium were met, explain to me why the district court got that wrong? Thank you.
So the court found that Mr. Schiffman didn't intentionally seek to spread the bedbugs. That's not what we're claiming. Our claim is that he basically intentionally refused to assist or do anything about the bedbugs that were in his apartment, even knowing that the presence of those bedbugs in an unabated condition could render the certificate of occupancy for that property void and cause the entire building to be vacated. That he willfully caused the infestation. Again, we're not suggesting that's the issue. We're suggesting he didn't do anything about it, knowing what he was supposed to do. We have testimony in the record about the bedbug people meeting with Mr. Schiffman, explaining exactly what he had to do. We have Dr. Krell's documents that are consistent with all of the notices from the bedbug people telling him what he had to do, how to prepare an apartment. None of that happened. I mean, do we need to get to the point where we have bedbugs spreading to adjacent apartments and tell those tenants, sorry, we couldn't evict this guy before you got infested? That's not a response. I can't tell you how many cases I've got where legal aid is representing tenants, next door neighbors of ground zero apartments, and we get hit with $3,000 fines, judgments, rent abatement. The landlord's got to take care of this problem. And if the decision from this court is that until a CO is revoked or until we have a spread, that the landlord can't take the action necessary to evict a tenant, that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a very big problem.
Mr. Kala, I think with all due respect, I think you're talking about a very different situation than one we have here. And I think I certainly agree with Judge Connolly in terms of the concerns over about bed bugs and that they can be, that they may not just be a nuisance. They may be more than that. But and I certainly understand your concerns in terms of landlords wanting to make sure that they're complying with the law. But I think you've used over and over a key word of could have resulted in, and looking at the St. Paul ordinance, it uses the word may. And the question is whether or not this particular incident rose to the level of meeting that exception. And so I think that is an issue of fact. And issues of fact, we defer to the district court's findings so long as they're supported by the record. You're citing to other evidence in the record, but we, on our review, we look to see whether or not the district court's findings are clearly erroneous and whether there's support for that decision, not whether or not there's contrary evidence to overturn the district court's decision. We're only an error-correcting court. So I guess ultimately my question is there evidence in the record to support the district court's decision? If so, then I think we need to affirm.
I appreciate the nuance, Your Honor. And the distinction I would draw is I don't think this is a factual issue. I think this is a legal issue. Ms. Orr did not.
Is it a legal issue? I don't understand, because it seems that we have to look at every single situation for the particular facts. I mean, quite frankly, I think the examples that Judge Connolly laid out, just about every single one of those, I think would meet the standard, but we have to focus on the particular facts here, don't we? Isn't this really a factual issue?
And the facts that we have is a landlord was at risk of losing its certificate of occupancy. And the question is, I mean, they tell you in law school, you don't question the hypothetical. And that's what Ms. Orr is doing. She should have perhaps called a witness from the city of St. Paul to talk about.
I'm going to let him answer the question here, counsel, but we're way over our time on rebuttal. I want Judge Reyes to get his question answered, but it didn't seem like we were really going at that. So I don't know if you feel that there's a need for an answer to your question, Judge Reyes. Maybe you could restate it for Mr. Collis so we can answer that question specifically, because we're well beyond any rebuttal time here.
Thank you, Judge Fleury. I'll just try to make it as simple as possible. Don't we have to look at the particular facts of this case and whether or not the district court's findings are supported by the record or whether they're clearly erroneous?
That's true, but the factual inquiry is based off of the legal standard. And the legal standard, I believe, here is what was the landlord at risk of if they didn't do what they did? And I believe the record is that the city ordinances put the landlord at risk of losing its certificate of occupancy. That's undisputed. There's nobody from the city to talk about the probabilistic outcome of a revocation proceeding. That's not in the record. That could have been, but it's not. I mean, and that's the kind of factual inquiry that might be relevant to Ms. Orr's claim that no harm, no foul, no lost CO, no violation. I just don't think we get to the factual question without addressing the legal issue. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kalla. And thanks to both of you for your arguments and your briefing here today. It's helpful to the court. And we will take the matter under advisement and we will issue our decision within the statutory time frame. We stand adjourned on this matter.